Welcome back to HTP Podcast, where we go beyond just strokes and strategy. And our main mission here is to change the culture of tennis, having one conversation at a time through a more positive and holistic approach. And today I have my old coach, dear friend Fernando. We've known each other forever. You coached me from like 14 to 16 and honestly had some of my best results. That's where I got to the finals of the Florida Busch Open with you. I don't even know if it's called that anymore.
Probably not.
And then I also got to the finals of National Clay Courts with you. You were definitely a huge factor in my life as coaching. And I also got to be like one of your first students as a coach. Oh, it's just funny.
Definitely my first one, yeah.
Yeah. So whoever was after me had a pretty high standard, I must say.
I bet you learn a lot.
Yeah. Anyhow, Fernando, thank you for being on here today and really want you to share your story with tennis, how you got started.
See if I can remember. I'm in my 50s now, so
That's all
yeah, I came
right.
here. I came here when I was 13, 1986, from Guatemala. I'm originally from there,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
the reason, or I came here, was because there was a limit of tennis. I was already traveling, and there was no different thing back then. It was very unusual for in my family to have to go for this or for go to tennis, and came to Florida, and 3 months became, I don't know, 40 years later.
Yeah. If you don't mind sharing a little bit about coming from Guatemala, obviously, I remember you telling me years ago, like you had to learn English. That wasn't like really easy for you to do. And I think it just gives a lot of people perspective of what it's really like coming to the US, how many opportunities we do have. It's not always easy right away. So if you could just share a little bit of that transition for you and some of the opportunities that tennis gave you along the way too.
It's definitely a huge transition. I don't think today, or even as a parent now, I don't know if I would have done what my parents did with me with my kids now.
Yeah.
Everything was a lot different. Came here in my head, it was all tennis, and but not realizing that, okay, well, I'm not at home. I'm in someone's house. I'm in someone's at an academy, and suddenly I'm responsible for food, my laundry, and then, like I said, I spoke some words of English, but not. And suddenly, 3 months after training, when we decided that I was going to stay, well, I had to go to school. So I went to middle school, 8th grade, and that was a completely new experience.
Yeah.
So
And what was
I
like the culture shock for you, just being in a completely new culture and environment?
the language barrier, I mean, I don't think I was as reserved as I became because of the language. If you knew me, he's more outgoing or more talkative or more. When you have that barrier and you want to say the right things, or you understood, I understood first before I could speak. It was what it was. But tennis was always like the moving vehicle that kept me going. Otherwise, I don't know, I would probably go back home, you know?
Yeah. No, that's a good
So
point.
it took me about maybe 13 to, I will say, by my sophomore year, maybe 2, 3 years, where I finally felt comfortable
Okay. So it took
speaking
a few
English.
years. Yeah.
Because you, by the time I was 16, then my brain switched. I was no longer thinking in Spanish. It was all English.
Okay.
So it takes quite a while. And then traveling of tennis does help. When I was in Europe a lot, and English became the language to speak, you
Yeah.
know. So I never, looking back, it's a good question, because I don't think it was something that you took in consideration. It was all about the tennis and where you're going. But there were definitely
Yeah.
times where I remember, like, oh, I don't know how to order food here. Like, how am I
Yeah.
gonna say it, you know?
Yeah. I was in France for a summer and I took, I had a French tutor because I was like, people there aren't going to just speak English to you, like out of respect for the culture. And for me to be able to order, I needed to learn certain words, the vocabulary, because you're in a completely different culture. And I think a lot of the time people forget that being in the US because there is so much culture here. Everyone
You
is
can
allowed to bring their culture into this country, right?
correct.
And so I think now, yes, looking back in years where we are now, people have just forgotten how much the US does really give people opportunities if you're willing to try and, speak the language and really actually learn more about the culture, which I think people forget. It's like, oh, I come from this country. Now people need to know my culture, which I feel is like really strong right now. In this
Different
country, it's like
times, right?
we allow a lot of people to express their culture. It's just how you're doing it, right? And I think there's just so many positive things that the US does offer that people forget. I mean, obviously, my dad's being South African. I just remember too, like growing up, some of the tennis coaches that were South African would like complain about the US. And I would just always be like, then why are you here? Like,
Right.
what if the US is
Yeah.
so bad? Like, why are you here if it's that bad? Oh, right. You got an opportunity. So that's why you're still here, because it's better actually than what you have at home. Tennis always being the factor of you being here, I think also shows a lot of determination, because it isn't easy adjusting from one culture to the next, but tennis gives you a little bit more variety, I think, compared to other situations.
Yeah, and it opened the doors to kind of like fitting in. If people have a hard time fitting in, well, I always have tennis and that will get me in there, you know? So, but to your point, US, I've never looked at the US as a challenge. So I always looked at it as an opportunity. As a matter of fact, being in Europe or in South America all those years, I lived in France for about a year and when I was 16, and that was hard because if I spoke English, there was no, it was a
Good
lot
luck.
harder than it. Yeah. My Spanish actually was better than the English situation. So, but I never had the US was always, you know, a place of where, oh, okay, I can do that. I don't have to be conscious about it, you know, that everybody's okay with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. So you traveled, you were in France playing a junior, and you obviously, you went to University of Southern Cal, D1, excellent school. You got a full ride scholarship.
The way I went in, it was in, I had already played ITF juniors. I already had played professional tennis and Davis Cup. Nowadays, that would not happen. I mean, I was a freshman at 20. Want the best experience. Yeah,
the NCAA rules have changed since
correct.
Then, but you were able to do all that, which is amazing. With that opportunity, getting a full ride to USC, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you get like an architect degree or something?
Well, no, I wanted to be but I wasn't allowed to because you know, when I got there, they said, well, you gotta choose. I want to be an architect. I have family that are architects, and the time coach, that's the one thing that you can't do because of the
your coach told you couldn't do it.
Back then there was no, it wasn't computerized anymore, it was still going to studios, and so by your second year you had to be there for 4 or 5 hours in the afternoons, and that meant that I couldn't be at practices or play matches, and so, you know, I was given a scholarship. Athletically, you have to commit to your tennis and then it's like you're a student athlete, but you have to commit to what works, you know.
I remember that I wanted to do like school abroad when I was in college. I just thought the whole experience would be amazing, but I couldn't because of tennis, because you're required, you're getting paid to play, essentially.
Correct. And now you're actually getting paid. You know, it's all changed a lot.
It has. So what did you end up majoring in then? What were you allowed
then,
to major in?
Yeah, well, now that's called public policy.
Okay.
Back then it was called urgent and regional planning. So it had some architectural classes and I wanted to be a developer.
Okay.
Before I started with you, I did work for a firm. I don't even know if you knew that, but I
yeah,
worked for a
firm I remember.
For about,
yeah.
for about a year and a half. But I knew I was always going to be outside on the tennis court.
After that, working a year and a half, and then when we started, what was it that really pulled you back into tennis? Because after that, you've been coaching ever since. You never went back, right?
No, I've been on the court now for about 25 years, something like that. I wanted to stay at USC and do the, you know, I was a volunteer assistant in my fifth year before I graduated, and I wanted to stay there and be a college coach at USC. Nowhere else. So that was the problem. I didn't want to go anywhere. I remember coach got me a job at Arizona and Arizona State as an assistant. I said, no, you misunderstand. I want to be here. He goes, well, I don't know. That's not,
possible.
You know, it's not right now. It's like, no, well, that's not, just follow my path in terms of my, you know, degree and whatnot. And then through mutual friends, you know, Stanford and
Stanford Boster. Yep.
Through a friend of his that I knew, that's how I met Stanford. You came along. I was like, I have to take this. This is all I want to do. Yeah. Again, I didn't know. It wasn't like you getting a job at an academy and you're gonna, it was full on one-on-one, and for you too, from your side too, it was like, oh well, this is gonna be who you're gonna be working in. Meanwhile you're 14. You know, I'm in my late 20s, like we're all excited, but like, you know, we really, you know,
I was navigating a new landscape for both of us.
What
was it though, like specifically for tennis, that you just like love so much, you have so much passion, and you obviously and like continued. What was it exactly?
I picked up a racket. My dad, chemical engineer, nobody ever played any sports in my family. My mom's, okay. My dad's, no one. And his brothers are also chemical engineers. He started playing tennis at 45. He came back home one day. I picked up his racket at 3 or 4 years old and never let go. It was just an automatic thing. And he used to drop me up at the club. When I was not in school, he would drop me at the club at 7 in the morning and pick me up at 12 at night.
Wow.
And it just, that was it. That's tennis amazing. Club. Yeah, tennis club with 3 clay courts, 4 racquetballs and squash and ping pong and a mini soccer field. And that's what we did all day.
It's so different now because kids just don't even play, which is like, out of club to play for hours, right? It's just so funny.
Yeah, I remember I'd be crying sometimes, like I didn't want to get picked up, but things were different. I mean, I never had to be pushed to play. It was just my own,
inner drive that you had.
Or likeness. I mean, mm-hmm. I played other sports, but I don't know, for some reason that just, it was an automatic. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right on. So, what you currently do now, I mean, you were a private coach. You had like a small group of players for 10, 15 years?
Oh, more than that. Yeah. I mean, I mean, I started in 2002? Mm-hmm. Was it? No, 2003. Maybe. No, 2002 with you. No, wait. Yeah. 2002. Yeah. Because I graduated in
2001, 2002, something like that. Yeah.
And had a private court, mm-hmm. or a private situation. And I went there 2-3 years. I didn't know anyone. And then I narrowed down to, you know, kids between 9 and 12. And they all given me 3 to 5 years. And I've, so far until this year, I put in 18 kids to college.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And some of them are, you know, late 20s, early 30s. Yeah. And I'm still have some connection with them as friends or acquaintances. And that's the best part of it. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. So. I definitely, when I got into coaching Martin Blackman at his academy, and now I get to see some of the kids who are like in their 20s and like have a full career, I'm like, oh my God. So I can only imagine what it feels like for you.
But it's very rewarding that way. Private situation was something that I love doing because it gave me the opportunity to connect with the player and kind of develop and go through the ups and downs, which is a lot. You're different at 9, you're different at 12, you're different at 14, you're different at 16. And mm-hmm. and definitely the experience I had at college led me to want to do this, because I think that if you're a tennis player and you can go to college mm-hmm. and experience, like you did, level, obviously, like at Division I, I'm sure that your experience at South Carolina was something dear to you.
Yeah.
In terms of not just tennis wise, but like the whole circle, right? Your social life. I'm assuming that you have friends that are still close to you from those 4 or 5 years. Maybe some of them don't even play tennis.
Yeah.
I have a few friends from school that don't even play tennis, and they're so that life cycle is what led me to like do it privately to try to get there, not trying to go academy or country club, or not that there's anything wrong with that. Just that's what I wanted to be involved with. Like an alternative of being a coach in college, I guess.
And when you're more of a private coach, or if you have a small group of player being a private coach, it's just, I think, compared to an academy, because I got experience at all, it's just so much more personable overall as a player coach experience. Like sometimes a player can get lost in an academy all the time, because most academies, they need results and they're looking for the top players to give them those results. Whereas when you're more in a private setting, like it doesn't need to be cookie cutter. It can be very personalized, from technique to tactical to mental and emotional, like all of that, the schooling, that can be so much more personalized when you are more in a private group setting or a one-on-one setting compared to academy. Because I know that was a big reason. Like I was in an academy, of course you have private lessons, but then, you know, after that is just, you're in a group of players, like you may want more from coaches than what you're actually getting, and getting that personalization that can really, I mean, again, it's different now because people can do online school full time, which I mean, and it's so much better now because of it being online. I mean, I do remember doing a year of online school. I hated it, but it also wasn't like online. Like I was, I would literally watch classes as like the teacher's teaching it. And then it was so weird.
I don't know how you guys
like,
do it.
Yeah. I mean, I only did it for 1 year. I did not like it. It wasn't for me. Everyone's different. And maybe the experience would have been different, because I think a couple years after that, the internet got a lot better. And so they were able to move a lot of stuff online. So many more options, I think, when you can work with a private private coach. And then what are you currently doing now?
Right now I have two kids that are graduating this year, and I have two that are a little younger.
Okay.
It's like another round of hopefully they're looking for to get a scholarship. 12 and 14. They're just started about a month ago.
Awesome.
Things are a little different, because that's the one thing about, you mentioned the one-on-one is very beneficial, but it's also, as I get older, the gap between myself and a 14-year-old or a 12-year-old becomes bigger.
Yeah.
And with this, the social media and everything, you want to make sure that the kids are not lonely.
Mm-hmm.
That
there's
now there's teams, you know, the parents are a lot more involved, and I'm very open, and I always try to be progressive and not just get stuck on, oh, this is the way I want to do it, because it works different for everybody.
Yeah.
Not everybody has the same personality. It's an individual sport, and, you know, competing, be top 15 in the country, boys or girls, it's not an easy task anymore. It requires a lot of, you know, it's
a lot
not,
of hours.
Yeah, you got to be open. You can't just close doors, and there's a lot of opinions flying in, and a lot of more distractions. But there's a lot of, you know, now they have the kids now try to copy the parents or what pros are doing. Like, you know, well, oh, we got the physical part. We have somebody, or we have somebody for this. We have somebody for that. We need you to do the tennis stuff. I'm like, you have to
be a lot more.
I have
like,
to.
Flexible.
I have to develop that, and then teaching it. You know, well, I've been used to developing all around, and now
doing
it's
everything.
Like, yeah, now it's like, oh, tennis is over. So now, okay, see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
No more like, how'd you feel about today? Or, you know, what are you feeling? Are you, you know, it's just what it is.
Yeah.
So
okay. So it's a lot different now.
So what
are some of the challenges that you face now?
I think the hardest one is sitting with whoever is involved the most, in this case, a parent.
Yeah.
Like this 12-year-old, when you were 14, I remember speaking to you quite a bit, not just on the court, but off the court.
Yeah.
And trying to get, I remember getting to know who you are and how you react. What can I say to help? Because at the end of the day, it's not, especially when you're competing, right? Developing, but at the same time, you have to compete. You have to learn how to compete, even though we're working on, well, we just switched the grip, but you still want me to win this match? Like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
So now I think it's, you have to be a lot more, I have to think a lot more and being more patient, more understanding of everybody around the kid, and hopefully try to connect with the player at some level, because they might just want to listen to mom, or they might just want to listen to dad, or maybe they're, some of them, you know, they have a life coach or a tennis psychologist, or that different, I think the parents are sometimes more competitive to the kid.
Yeah.
And so that's become a different dynamic. I mean, like, that looking back, I prefer what I went through with you and other players before social media and all of this, because there was a lot of more connection. Now it's you have to be very diplomatic with everybody, because it's not just, you know, parents are on the court, tennis tournament, they're talking to other people. It's where it is, right? I mean, you look at the top players and they all have teams. It's not just, I grew up looking at the individual. Now it's different. It's a whole team. So
The landscape has changed a lot in that way, where it's just, before, you had a tennis coach who really did everything. They were like the trainer, they're trying to help you with nutrition and all the tennis stuff and the emotional and mental side. And now if you have a coach for like each thing. And I remember I was going to help player more on the mental side, and I remember telling the dad, I was like, I think you have everything covered. I don't think you need me. He already had like a full-time mental coach.
Correct.
He had a strength coach. He had like a recovery coach. He had a hitting coach. And then he had like another coach. And I was like, this kid has too many things actually going on. He's 13. He's so confused. The biggest complaint that the parent had was like, how can I get him to like translate, right? That's always the thing. How can the player translate into practice, right? First, he's 13. It's not going to happen at 13. Like if it does, then typically there's the mental side is a lot more mature. A lot of the time.
But you got to give it time.
Like technically they're just very talented and they need to learn to like structure that. But when I talked to the dad, I was I don't think you need me. I think he has too much. And if anything, my suggestion would be to actually like eliminate a couple more things so he can actually just absorb from one or two coaches instead of like five different coaches. I was like, you're overwhelming your kid. Assuming that's kind of like a lot of what you're talking about. Because
then they go compete by by themselves. It's not like they go compete
Yeah.
with a group of people. Like, remember what we all talked about? It's
Yeah.
like,
Yeah.
and then things don't go well, and then suddenly it's like 20 steps back,
Yeah.
you know? And, well, you told me to do this. You told me to do, then he told me or she told me. It's like,
And then they can't think for themselves, which is ultimately what they need to do when they're out there.
yeah, because like I said, at the end of the day, even now that you can coach a little bit, like you don't have to have like signals or like you can actually still not like football or basketball where, you know, well, Jira has a game plan and she has the players and that's how we play and that's how we substitute and that's how we hear it's like talked about it, but if you but it's not happening, okay, so now what else can I do here? And it's not easy. I mean, it's a lot harder for the player. I mean, there's a lot of good things that you can have that we, you know, when you say that before we did everything, just because I was trying to help somebody with nutrition doesn't mean that I knew what I was, what you're supposed to eat. I'll be like, yeah, don't eat too much. What does that mean? Yeah, don't eat too much for the match. You're not loaded, but that, it wasn't like, you know, we were experts at, but now you're right. It could be too much.
Is one thing you wish you knew now as a coach compared when you first started?
I've learned, I have to say the one thing, being patient and just listening more.
Mm.
More listening more. It's you, and then I don't have to say anything. It's amazing. Then trying to figure out, like trying, you keep talking. Let's figure out, because when you're younger, you want that. But now it's like, yeah, no. If I listen, maybe the answer will be right there. I don't even have to say anything because you let it out, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's great. I definitely could understand that. I definitely think, as young coaches, there's see so many things happening at once, and it's hard to as a young coach really initially figure out like what's the first thing to really tackle, and then at the same time, you're also wanting to solve all those issues instead of like focusing on like the primary one. But in the beginning stages, it's kind of hard to know exactly like where to maneuver. So yeah, no, that's great. I think any coach starting out, that's great advice
Oh
for.
my God, you saved miles.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your time
Oh,
today,
thank you, G.
Fernando.
That's so cool.
I appreciate you coming on HTP Podcast. And if you like these tennis tales, please subscribe, like, and share.